Welcome to the Coworkers Podcast with Jesse and Shaney,
where every believer is a coworker in God's mission. Welcome back, friends. Today, I'm really excited about this episode. We are going to be talking about how to develop female national ministry partners. So our sisters, wherever the context is that we are serving, how do we equip them to do the missionary task? This is a topic that I love talking about. It has been such a source of joy in my life. And I know that there are plenty of women listeners and men too, I hope, that want to learn on this topic. So I want to welcome two guests, fellow sister coworkers on the field, Elle and Terry. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's exciting to be here today.
Elle, I've had a chance to get to know a little better because she and her husband, Jared, have been serving in a similar part of the world as our family. They're both from Austin, Texas. Woohoo for Yummy Tacos from Austin. And they have been married about 8 years. They have two sweet little babies, 3-year-old and a 5-month-old, and have been serving overseas for 6 years, South Asia and Southeast Asia.
Yes, I have two little kids, so getting a break for an hour to do this podcast is like a vacation for me. So
I'm so glad we could provide that for you, Elle.
Thank you.
Well, congrats on your sweet little 5-month-old.
Thanks.
And Terry is a new friend, and Terry, I've never met, so I'm extra thankful that you're willing to jump on here, Terry. You were just recommended to us by some mutual friends, more than one mutual friend, that, man, you've got to get Terry on your podcast because she's so great at developing ministry partners. So Terry is from Atlanta, Georgia, and has been serving in the East Asia region for many years now and started out single, got married, now has two sons on the field. And so Terry, what I loved about just reading about your seasons on the field is you've seen a lot of different seasons as single, married, and then as the kids have grown up, now kids in school, and also different contexts for doing ministry. So I look forward to hearing more about that from you.
Yeah, I think just being on the field for so many years, 10 years single, and now my anniversary is today, 17 years married.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Thank you to Francis for sharing you with us today.
He's a good man. He shares a lot.
Awesome. Okay. We're coming into this topic with a missions principle in mind that developing local believers to do the missionary task is much more fruitful and strategic than we Westerners thinking we are the main doers in the work. And also, when we say like a national partner or a ministry partner, what we are meaning by that is basically anyone who's willing to come alongside us and do the missionary task. So someone who has some availability, a willingness, a certain amount of love for the Lord and love for the lost, right? That we can work with and that we can grow with. So there's a spectrum, right? You might have some really main national ministry partners who are more like leaders and have been in it a bit longer. You might have some that are brand new believers that don't really know much yet, and they're just willing to go alongside. And we're going to just be talking about that whole spectrum of ministry partners. So Terry and Elle, when you are just thinking about ministry partners, what are you looking for and how do you find them?
Because I'm in a mature mission field now, I'm on the island of Taiwan, and the church has been here 70 years. We've just had our 70th anniversary this year for most of our churches that we work with. And to find these leaders that we want to be able to impact, we break our work into two parts. One is direct, where we do direct evangelism through English corners and English cafes and going out and sharing with other believers, but we also do a lot of catalytic ministry where we empower and equip leaders in churches, not necessarily the pastors, but just laymen or deacons or small group leaders. And so how we find those people is we go to where they are, the church leaders. We often find out where are their church meeting, where pastors come together for encouragement. We call it co-workers meeting. So we and our team as missionaries, we go to that faithfully month to month. And at this place, we can build relationships where we can then meet them for meals and coffee and get to know them better outside of the meetings. But how do we find ministry partners in a mature field is we go to where the leaders are. We don't ask them to just come to us. We make ourselves available where they go.
That's so good. Elle, what would you say?
Yeah, so I would say similar to Terry, we have been in different fields where there is an existing church. And so we have taken a equipping role also. So at the beginning, that looked like we would go to any church that would have us to train them in how to share the gospel and make disciples and look for the people that would be faithful to do something with that. So it'd be the same both for men and women. Who is going to be faithful to go and share with one person and continuing to filter through those believers? And then I think one of the ways that me as a woman that I have found partners is through my husband. And so he has also kept an eye out for different opportunities where he says, okay, I have this partner and their wife, I think she has a really big vision. Maybe let's meet with her and see what her vision is and see if it can serve her as she is doing ministry along with her husband. And so those kind of different ways of looking at the existing partners and seeing what women are in their churches, are their wives willing to come alongside them? And then also just going and training broadly to the existing body.
So Elle, let's dig in a bit more on that. You do a training. How do you start? And then what do you do in that training that helps you know who you're going to partner with more?
Yeah, so I think our first training would be a who to go to, a gospel tool, and then a little bit of what do you do for follow-up with them. And also, I think we've been really starting to train abiding, knowing that abiding is so integral to the whole process. We will go do a training, have them set a goal. We're looking for anybody that's faithful. So looking at holistic obedience. They don't have to do just what I think that they should do, but are they obeying the Holy Spirit's prompting in that meeting? As they're setting a goal, are they faithful to follow through with that goal? And then coming back and seeing that. And then I think I'm looking for women that have a big vision. So when you give them when they're drawing out their oikos of who's in their life that is a non-believer, they're not just drawing one or two people, they're drawing 20 people on their map thinking, okay, these are these 20 people and there's this village and then there's this other person and they have a vision for their people and they just don't know how to do it yet. And so those are the type of women that I say, okay, I want to invest more time in you. I want to meet with you again and encourage you.
When you do find women who are available and willing, sometimes we say they're fat. Have you heard this? Faithful, available, teachable. Okay.
Yes.
So faithful, available, teachable. Terry, why don't you share a bit more? What are some of those next steps for you and how you would continue meeting with them and developing them?
So I had those three letters in my notes that I was going to talk about too, but I wanted to change it to FAD, F-A-D, faithful, available, and they have a desire. They are teachable because they just have a desire. They know they're not where they want to be or they're not where they could be, but they're willing to move in that direction. When we go to a coworkers meeting or if I go to a church and do a EV training, evangelism training, you're not going to get everybody who's desirous of growing. And so when you find the one or two who come back the next week and say they did share or that God opened their eyes to love on somebody that they had never thought about before, then you've sifted through the 10 or 20 that you've trained and found the one or two who are desirous. And so meeting them in just the training time is really not going to give them the influence and the encouragement and the accountability that they need to grow quickly, because some seed will grow much faster than other seed. So having them in our home, we have a lot of people in our home for dinner and we go out and meet them for coffee Taiwan is a tea and coffee nation. They love to meet at coffee shops. And so it's very conducive. And again, it has to be in their time schedule, on their time frame. Thankfully, I'm at a point in my life where my kids are in high school that I can make more time in the day. So I can go out in the daytime and meet people as I need to. But definitely finding who are the ones that are passionate, and it's usually not the one you think. You always look in the crowd and you're like, oh, that person, maybe they're the one. And it's often not what I'm thinking. God brings somebody completely different. It's so funny.
I would totally agree. And as I was thinking about this as well, and thinking about some of the best partners God has given me, none of them did I think they were going to be that when I first met them. So there is something about you just keep investing in the ones who are willing and desirous. And then it's kind of like, well, time will tell, right? You can't know at the beginning.
You can't.
So what would you say are some principles that you're keeping in mind as you're continuing to develop those available, faithful, and desirous women, Terry?
One thing I learned just about 10 years ago was about thirds, three thirds. And whether you're doing a meeting or a training or just coming alongside a friend who might be a teammate or another believer, just to take half, a third of the time to talk about their heart. How are they doing with the Lord? How is their marriage doing? How's parenting going? Do they have any broken relationships? And often we walk around with something that needs to be fixed in our lives, but we're afraid to or not willing to. And so just dealing with them as a person, encouraging them, loving them, and also giving them the push that they might need to do the right thing. Because sometimes if somebody would just hold me accountable, I'd be a much kinder, patient wife or mother. So just dealing with that for a third. And then the next third would be talking about what are the next steps of their discipleship or their training. And then the last third would be praying together to really talk about to the Lord maybe those trouble areas they have in their life, or asking God to give them courage and joy in their follow through of doing what we've studied that time or talked about. So really just sometimes we focus on the middle part. We want to train, and we forget the individual and the joy in the Lord. I read a quote the other day that if you want people to know that there's joy in the Lord, you need to show that joy. And if you don't have that joy, then what's all this for?
That's great. We also use a three-thirds model that sounds very similar to that. And developing that relationship and us leading out and sharing our struggles even and being honest in that first third, I think is really goes a long way in developing the relationship. It kind of shows them, oh, I can actually be honest about my marital struggles because she just shared with me that her marriage isn't always perfect. So just sharing those different parts of our lives, I think goes a long way to strengthen the trust, which I think trust is a key component in a healthy partnership. Elle, what would you add as key components to developing your sisters that you're working with?
I think both of you kind of hit on this, but asking good questions, not assuming that you understand what the obstacles are that they're facing, or not assuming that you know what they need for the next step. Like, we obviously have our simple tools for evangelism and making disciples, but past that, like asking the question of how can I serve you? Where are you stuck? What do these women need encouragement in? Making sure I understand that rather than coming in with an idea of, okay, this is what I think they should know right now. Not making those assumptions and making sure that I know what they're facing, what they're struggling with, not on, just on a personal level, but also on a strategic ministry level.
I think, Elle, you already mentioned having simple tools that they can learn, right? A simple, reproducible gospel sharing tool, a simple, reproducible way to do follow-up and have like a yellow light strategy, we call it, when after you've shared the gospel, if someone is interested and they want to keep hearing, well, then what do I do? You know, and so having tools that they can learn, I have found that modeling those for them is a key component when possible. I know, Elle, you've had a season of of having to do a lot virtually. But when we can, going out with them and modeling and doing gospel sharing together, where we model the tool, but we're quickly having them be involved, and then eventually they're doing it and we're kind of the helper. And doing that, I think, for every single part of the missionary task, how to share the gospel, how to lead that next follow-up meeting, how to do a participative Bible study where you just read scripture and ask those questions, how to do that three-thirds process. Keeping those things in mind, that we are trying to model a reproducible pattern for them.
One time I met some I met some Hong Kong friends at a church, because a lot of Hong Kong people have immigrated here in Taiwan. And we trained them in two ways to live, which is a simple drawing method to share the gospel. And so the wife called me and said, "Hey, I want to have lunch with you." And so I said, "Okay, great." We went to lunch at an Indian restaurant, and her husband came, and they brought another Hong Kong woman who had just immigrated. And because we had just trained them in two ways to live, I said, "Hey, why don't you guys share two ways to live with this visitor?" And they said, "Oh, no, we don't feel comfortable yet. We brought you so that you would share it with her." So it was so exciting to be at lunch and use the napkin to share and model for them, because they weren't quite feeling up to it yet, and was able to share. And the woman didn't receive Jesus, of course, at that time, because she had problems with number one, who is God and is there a God? But it was great to be able to model it for them. And later on, they have been able to share in with their small group. And this woman, it took 2.5 years, and she got baptized about 3 months ago. The woman who came to the Indian restaurant to see my two ways to live drawing on the napkin. It was great. But
that's
awesome. You do have to model, and maybe it may not be when you thought you were going to be doing it that you wanted them to do it, but just be willing to help them in their weakness.
And I think even remembering all the reps we've had in our lives, all the Bible studies we've sat in, trying to give them exposure. I mean, everything is word-based, right? So all, in a sense, it's just basic discipleship, word-based discipleship that you would do with any believer. But then I think being intentional to expose them to missions principles in the Word, to help them see for themselves God's heart for the nations, or just the clear theme of bold evangelism in the book of Acts, you know, but helping them see that theme throughout scripture, wherever they're at on the missionary task and what they're involved in, just trying to help them take that next step.
Yeah, I would say that identity and encouragement and identity is such a key piece along with that. I just think about the context that I've worked in, where women are told that their role is to only be in the home, or women are told that they can't share the gospel. And so both showing them biblical examples and also encouraging them in their identity in that, as we model all of these different processes with them.
One of our main South Asian ministry partners, he's so fruitful. You know, he has lots of multiplying work all throughout South Asia. And he reminds us Westerners consistently, the number one thing you can do for your national partners is encourage them. You know, like, we can kind of overcomplicate it, but he just always reminds us they need encouragement. Keep loving them. Keep encouraging them. Maybe seeing the potential in them and just calling it out. You know, like, maybe sometimes they don't feel confident sharing or leading a group, but for you to be able to say, "You can just try it," and to be there to help them. I think sometimes they just need that little push, and for someone to believe in them more than they believe in themselves. I want you both to think about one or two of your just most fruitful partnerships you've had, and just tell us a little bit about that.
Number one, again, I think is just availability and desire. When I was single, I had a community center, and the people that worked for me were nationals in that country, and they were always available because they worked at our office. But just in this new context in Taiwan, where people are super busy, it really is a filter. You just to find the available people who are desirous of partnering. You can't partner with people who don't want to be your partner, because a partner is equal. Some people want to be led. Some people want you to be a manager or to take them along and supervise them. But that's not what the Lord is telling us. He asks us to be a servant, which is not a manager. He asks us to be, we call it a tonglu ren. You're on the same road together, partnering. So you meet a lot of people in this world and you really like them, but they don't have time and they don't want to be a partner. And they might be a partner in something else, but not what you're doing. So I think it's very important to find the heart that's just available and wanting to grow together. And I think a lot of people are desirous of somebody who will walk beside them and not drag them along or push them from behind.
Yeah, I would say ministry and finding partners has not looked at all what I thought it would. The two women that are probably the most fruitful and faithful in my life right now, I've never really lived in the same place as them. And so it's mostly been virtual, and I get to see them a few times a year. So they're actually two of my husband's national partners. It's their wives. And they have previously been in seasons where they were not involved. And I came and asked just a few questions of, what do you see your role is in all of this? What do you see your role, like your role as in your husband's ministry? And nobody had ever asked them that question before. And so from there, it's just expanded. And they have now a vision for coming alongside their husband's ministry or going and starting work among women. And so I think when I am thinking about them and kind of what are those key pieces, they are willing to make sacrifices. They've counted the cost of being a follower of Jesus, and they've also counted the cost of making disciples. And they have said yes, and they continue to say yes, even though it's hard. And like Terry said, they're available. They make time for ministry, even when it's not convenient. And so those are two of the key things that I think have allowed them to see God do amazing things through their lives.
I'm just reminded of the power of showing women how God used women in the Bible. Sometimes just highlighting that for them can really be life-changing for them and their husbands, for their husbands to suddenly have new expectations for how the women in their network or their wives can be involved in the work. So that's really exciting. And it's awesome that even though you're not in their city, look at how God has used you in their lives. We all know face-to-face is the best, but man, God can use Zoom calls, right?
I really like what Elle mentioned too, is just asking them where they see themselves in ministry, or what could God be showing them instead of us telling them what we think they should be doing. I think that's good. One thing we talk about in our team is something called BLESP, BLSP. We want to bless them and love them and serve them. But then the last is we want to push them too. We want them to grow in ways that God is showing them. It might not be, I might not know what that woman needs to go to the next step or to be faithful in what area, but I can encourage her with questions to start thinking about what is God showing you. And a lot of our Christian relationships are blessing and loving and serving, but we might be fearful of the push. And it doesn't need to be a push where you shove. It might be a small nudge. And I think the mission field and missionaries are required to have this P part of ministry. Otherwise, everybody's just sitting around and you're not getting motivated and encouraged and exhorted.
And I think the blessing, loving, and serving is what develops the trust in that, right? So that then you can have those pushes back and forth, that we can receive that as well, that we can learn from each other. But having that trust and that honesty, that takes some time to develop sometimes. So we've lived in three different contexts. And so for each context, I can imagine those closest ministry partners that God gave. And some of the keys that I saw were consistent time together, having those simple, reproducible, word-based tools. So nothing fancy. We did the same thing every time we were together. Lots of time in the Word and out sharing the gospel and following up with people. And eventually going through hard times together. Yeah. Now, that's not something we plan for. But as I look back, when that's happened, when either I've been in a hard place and they have been there for me, or they've been in a hard time and I've been there for them, it's almost like in that moment, God accomplishes in your relationship what might have taken like a year to accomplish otherwise. You know, just the trust and the closeness that grows through that. So that's been just a joy. I'm so thankful for how my sisters have been there for me in those hard times.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to share too is about time, that time is compound interest when you are putting your money to save it away. But time is also compound interest in relationships. The more time you can spend together, the more time you can talk deeply, you can see them growing, you can plan together, you can, like you said, walk through hard times together. And also, the more time you spend together, most likely you will have a disagreement. And yes, that's when you can work through and show them how Christ calls us to be Christ-like, even in our disagreements, to work through them and to give each person give a little bit to come to an agreement. So I think if you have never had a disagreement with someone, you're really not a very close partner, because there will be disagreements. Yeah.
Yes, there's going to be misunderstandings, yes, sometimes because of cultural reasons. There's going to be hurt feelings. There's going to be conflict.
Yes.
There's going to be disagreements. So maybe let's talk about some of the hard stuff now. What word of wisdom would you give on when that happens, when you have that misunderstanding or that conflict or that hurt feeling? How have you worked through that?
You definitely have to be mature and be the peacemaker. Being a peacekeeper is a little more easier. You just don't bring up anything difficult. You can keep the peace. But if you want to make peace, it's much more difficult. And whenever you feel the Spirit move your heart, like you said something and you can tell they didn't take it right, or you said something and you knew after it came out of your mouth, oh, that sounded harsh, or maybe I shouldn't, take the initiative to heal that relationship first. Go to the person to either apologize or to speak about your heart if it got hurt. But don't sit around and wait. It's so sad. It's a very bad example to make others feel uncomfortable because of your sadness or your anger. And then maybe they don't know how to come forward. But to always be the first to initiate and to make peace.
That's so good. Elle, what would you add?
So I am currently living in my third country in the past 6 years. And so with that, I think being a learner of culture and recognizing that, man, I made a mistake because I just didn't understand your language or your perspective, and just taking it as a learning opportunity and asking questions in that and being willing to say, like, what did I do wrong? Where did I misunderstand you? What could I have done better? And asking my partner and also other people within that culture that I trust, just the humility to recognize that my American mindset and my American way is probably not the best way in that situation, being willing to admit that.
If you're on the field very long, then you're thinking of some examples right now as you're listening, right? I mean, I just kind of got a bad feeling in my stomach thinking of a couple of the conflicts we've gone through. So part of it is we just live and learn. You know, you make mistakes and you do your best to be humble. And sometimes it is just a conflict of like my American tendencies versus this Asian tendency that kind of bumped up against each other. And we got to work it out and we've got to talk through it and we have to be humble and love each other. Most of the time, if it's a healthy relationship, you can get through that because of if there's love and maturity there. But sometimes handling conflict is different in our context. And so I think it really does require wisdom and prayer and grace and patience and just praying for God to heal hearts and restore. Have you ever had a time when you felt like maybe a partnership was kind of ending? I think sometimes there's natural kind of endings or transitions from investing deeply in one person and you kind of feel like it's moving on to someone else. I'm asking because I think sometimes especially as women, like I can get really attached to my partners and it almost just feels like hurtful to move on from someone, even if everything is saying like you need to move on, you know, where Jesse will like see it for months and be like, are you still trying with her? Like she doesn't seem to really want to do it, you know, and I can just keep trying.
Doesn't happen all the time, thankfully, but it's obvious sometimes when you're pulling teeth to just make time to get a coffee or to come to their church and pray with them. They're always busy. You just have to let go. You know, one thing that the Lord tells us is time is of the essence. And we don't know how much time we have on the field. You don't know what's going to happen to your children that might require the family to move back home or yourself or whatever. So to pour into somebody that's not willing to even meet with you or it's just struggle, it's very hard. But thankfully, God also gives us those partners that do want to stick. And you take what your losses are in one area and take them and put them in the area that's growing fast. Go where God's working.
I think two things came to mind. I've had kind of the opposite happen where I've had ladies that I've been spending time with that have gone and looked for coaching from somebody else, or there's like another one of my teammates that would be a better fit to serve them. And I think being able to give away the kingdom and having a kingdom growth, it's not about me. It's not about growing my influence. It's not about growing, you know, the things that I'm involved in and I'm hearing stories about. It's about what is best for the kingdom. What is best for that woman? How can she best be encouraged? And then the other thing that kind of came to mind is everything is seasonal. So I think of two of my partners that 10 years ago, even though their husband was a pastor, they would have never wanted to get involved. And so just praying that, okay, maybe this isn't the right season for this woman to be involved, but praying that 5 years from now, the Lord will do something different in her life or will open her eyes to this time that she has. And so being willing to see things as seasonal and continuing to pray that God will use that woman for the kingdom, I think takes away some of the sadness in my mind when there's women that I'm no longer getting to meet with as consistently.
The seasons of life, I think seasons of life impacts our national sisters more than our brothers. I think it's just a bigger factor in our lives as women. One of the challenges for developing women is if they are married, then they have expectations at home. If they have children, then they have a lot to keep up with. Even if their kids are in school, there tends to be a lot of home responsibilities. And even for single women, in our context, sometimes if they're still living with their parents, which is the norm here, they may not have the freedom that we are used to as Americans. How have you maybe met women where they're at or figured out ways to work around some of those challenges? Because it's come up more than once. Availability can be a challenge. How have you all worked through that?
I think encouraging faithfulness in whatever season it is. So how can you be faithful to make disciples in your home? How can you, if you have small children, right now I have a 5-month-old, I'm at home a lot. And so how can I use my home for ministry? Whether it's inviting other people in, whether it's putting the kids down to bed and doing a Zoom call or calling one of my ladies at 10 p.m. at night, how can I use this season and be faithful? And encouraging women to figure that out for themselves rather than, I think Terry said this, rather than just telling them what I think they should do. Looking for different creative ways to be faithful. One of my partners actually told me a few months ago, I showed her all these examples of women in the Bible and asked her the question of, what is the Holy Spirit asking you to do? And she was hesitant because of all of her responsibilities at home. She didn't know how she was going to do it all. And she told me later on that she prayed and asked God what to do. And she said, God made it really easy for me to sweep and do my dishes and clean my house, that I can do it 2 times as fast as I used to. And it's not anything that she did differently, but she prayed and had a heart to be involved, and God blessed that. And so when I had my second baby, I thought the same thing. Okay, Lord, I really don't like doing dishes. And it feels like this is taking up too much of my mind in this season of just cleaning my house and cleaning diapers and everything. How can you make this enjoyable for me to where at the end of the day, I still have something to give? I still have time for ministry. And so I think that mindset and what my partner shared with me in that has been really impactful as I think about availability in seasons.
We had our first few years on the field with no kids. So Jesse and I just did everything together, right? And that was great. And then the baby started coming and it was this big transition of, okay, we got to bring people to the house a lot more. There's going to be less of Jesse and Shaney riding the dirt bike out to the village. And now we're going to be bringing people to our house and embracing the messy part of that. You're kind of half engaged. You're chasing toddlers and you're changing diapers, but you're also able to love on these partners and get time with them. So just thinking rightly for ourselves and for our partners about how God wants me to serve and what is pleasing to the Lord, because we're not trying to teach our partners that their work is not valuable at home, right? We want to encourage them in that. It's so important for them to, and for us to grow in loving our husbands and children, like Titus 2 says. And so helping them see God wants to use me in my home. God wants to use me in the harvest. How can I engage in both of those places?
Yeah, I was just going to say with that, as I've been doing the coworker study and putting these examples in front of women, I've been breaking it out into those opportunities can either be in the home, in the church, or in the harvest. And none of those is better than the other. None of those is lesser than the other. You can make disciples of your children, have your children be like Timothy's mom and grandma, like raise up a Timothy. You can be encouraging women in your church that maybe you don't have availability to go out into the harvest, but how can you pour into a younger woman we see in Titus, the older woman teaching the younger woman. And so just looking for whatever opportunities are around ladies in that season.
So doing the coworker study, looking at examples in the Bible and just showing them these three categories. Here's ways to serve in your home. Here's ways to serve in your church. Here's ways to serve in the harvest. I love that. What would you add, Terry?
Yeah, I just think that having a marriage and children, you have to really work together with your spouse to talk it out. When my kids were small, like Elle's, I love what she said, that God would give her joy as she's doing her house things, that she would have time when it's time to go out and do ministry, maybe in the evening when her husband can watch the kids. So she'll have enough energy and joy left over to pour into people at the harvest or at the church. So that's really good. But you really just need to talk with your spouse and that your husband would be willing to watch the children when you can go out in the evenings when they're small. Now, my kids are in high school and they need me in the evenings now. Like they want to talk at 9 p.m., 10 p.m. So I can't be out a lot in the evenings, but I can now be out in the daytime when they're at school. So it has changed drastically, but I do need to be very in communication with my husband that we can make a schedule where he allows me to go out to do what I can at the times that are best for our family. I love being outside. I'm an extrovert. My husband's an introvert, so he's very willing to hang back and let me go out. I've been very thankful for that. But I do encourage husbands to free up their wives to do ministry that brings the wife joy and impacts the kingdom.
So good. I just was talking with Jesse last night as we look at next month, you know, starting a new school year. It's kind of okay, what do we want to do differently? And just talking with him, how do you need me to help you more in leadership? And just getting his opinion, because I can overload my schedule to where it's not healthy for my family. Maybe a listener needs to hear that as we talk about this wonderful work of developing national partners, that it's just not the only thing that we're trying to do with our lives. And 1 Corinthians 7 talks about for the married woman, we have divided interests because we're caring for our home. We're just like you said, Elle, we've got the home, the church, and the harvest. We have a lot of areas. And so this is one area. And the Lord also has other people and other ways he wants to use us. So the Holy Spirit will guide in that. And we want to just listen to our husbands and serve them well as we do that. Think about for a second the listener who is like, oh, this all sounds so wonderful. Oh, I wish I had national partners like this, but I don't have any. Where do I start?
I would first encourage someone to pray, just to ask God to open their eyes, because it's probably not the person that they think it is, or they're probably not going to find the perfect partner because there isn't one. They don't exist. The second is you just need to get out and find where the fruit are. Some of them are sitting in a church or in a Bible study or in a Christian coffee shop working, but being where they are so that you can start developing a friendship. You can't make a partner without making a friend first. So ask God to bring you a national friend. A lot of our teammates, when we meet with them one-on-one for encouragement, they often ask us to pray for them to find a national friend. So I would ask that anybody who's on the field wondering, how am I going to make a partner? You got to have a friend first, and then ask them to come with you when you go out to do things, to do ministry, whether that's evangelism, door-to-door visiting. That works a lot in our culture. And just going into places where you know that people need to hear the word. And you'll find people who want to go with you to watch you, or you won't. And then you know that's not a partner, but they might be your friend. It's okay to have a friend that doesn't become a partner, because I have, have a lot of those.
And there's a place for that. There's a place for us to have those friendships that are encouraging and life-giving. Elle, what would you add?
When we first landed overseas, I prayed and prayed for God to bring me a national partner. And I think in my first few years, trained like 700 believers how to make disciples. And from those 700, there were really two guys that stuck. And there was very few women that spoke English. And my language was not good enough to coach any of them moving forward. And so I kept praying and praying and praying. And it wasn't until a few years later, I had a 1-month-old. I was stuck in America for COVID, and the opportunities came. I have a 1-month-old, and it's because of the time difference. I'm waking up at 6 a.m. trying to meet these women over Zoom. Not ideal at all, but it was the timing needed to be that. Like, God knew the timing and knew my frustration, but there was something coming. And so I think for the woman that's feeling discouraged, just keep being faithful to look, to train, to network. Like Terry said, to be out there where believers are, knowing that there's not a perfect opportunity, that it may not be when you expect it or where you expect it, but keep your eyes open for who God's using and how you can serve them.
Elle, I am so impressed at your 10 p.m. calls and your 6 a.m. calls. Way to go. I mean, truly, I'm really spurred on just that your willingness to sacrifice and do things when it's not your preferred time.
I'm so glad I said yes. And I don't know how I said yes with a little baby trying to, when I wasn't sleeping at all. I don't know how I said yes, but the Lord has used that partner and has changed my life because of that. Like, I've benefited just as much, and she's encouraged me as a mom in so many ways. And so the Lord knew that I needed that also.
Mm-hmm. And that's so true. I think of a lot of our relationships that we're supposed to be the mentors, and yet, goodness, we get to work with these ladies who mentor us in so many ways. Terry, you just talked about praying, and I do think for people who are on their way to the mission field, some of the most important things to pray for are, I pray for a national friend. I pray for a national who will become a ministry partner. I pray for a believer who's willing to get in the word with me and pray with me and go out to share the gospel with me and just see what God will happen. That's a great thing to be praying for. I had a season where I was feeling discouraged, like, oh, I need some women to work with, and feeling kind of desperate. Like, I just want somebody to spend time with and to invest in. And so I just made a list of any believer woman that I knew that is just even a possibility. It was a small list. I mean, this was when I had three toddlers, you know, but I just decided there were like five main ladies. I'm going to try to spend time with each of these once a week and just see what happens. See who will do it. See who will keep being available. See where it will develop. And it did. Like, some of those kind of fizzled out, but one of those became a lasting partner. So that was just kind of on me to make some efforts, almost like invite myself over, you know, be proactive and say, can I come to your house today? Or just show up. Okay. I want to end with a fun question. What do you do to have fun with your sisters? To just laugh and enjoy life together. What do you do?
You know, I haven't gotten to be in the same place very consistently as my partners. And so I would say one of the biggest joys has been for them to meet my kids, because I met them before I had any. And so for them to get to meet my little baby and laugh with me about all of the silly things that my kids do, and for them to share similar stories of their kids. They definitely meet me in the season of life I'm in. Their kids are older, or, you know, one of my partners is an empty nester now. And so they have been so kind and encouraging for me where I'm at. And so I think it's just been really fun getting to see the ways that they're like my biological sister, and that they just love my kids really well.
Yeah, it's really pleasurable when you have a friend or a ministry partner that's at the same stage of life, because you can do so much together, not just in the home, but go to parks and things like that. As my kids have gotten older and we're in a field where we work with a lot of church leaders, my husband and I love to go overnight with a couple, because in this country, most people, when you buy one, you get one. So when they hire a pastor, they get two. It's the pastor and his wife. So we take a lot of them out overnight, and we do yearly retreats where it is actually retreating. We just give them an opportunity to talk with the Lord, to worship really good music, and to eat good food. And I love games. So it's been really great. And we just love laughing. So we'll take our best partner. Is the leader of a church who now has become the top leader of the convention in Taiwan. And every year on Valentine's Day, we go to a hotel, the four of us, and we ride bikes on the beach and just enjoy time together. And those overnight trips are so great. Not everyone can do them, but if you have small kids, you can do it with other people with small kids too. But the nighttime is so conducive to deeper relationship building. It just goes into deeper stuff and tender times. We really cherish our overnight trips with our ministry partners. It's really wonderful.
Those, if it can be like a family retreat or a leader's retreat, some way to get them out of their home where they're not in charge of cooking and things. And South Asians love to stay up late, whether you're just sitting on your bed talking or whether you're listening to music and dancing, anything like that. A one or two night away can really bond you together much more than like meeting weekly for a few months, you know? So those are great opportunities. The games, we always have game time because it gets people laughing and silly and loosened up. And I think it's truly such a fruitful part of the meetings. We've done talent shows where people will sing and all those like different ways to have outings, to go to a picnic at a park, anything like that, where it's just getting people comfortable and relaxed and spending time together, I think is great.
One weekend a year can be as equal to 52 times meeting at a coffee shop. Because the time compounds again. You get deeper and deeper as the hours go by. Whereas each week, if you meet once, you just have to dip in each week. It's harder.
Yeah. And I would say being willing to, like, me wearing a local dress and me trying to learn a local dance and looking very silly doing it, that just makes more progress than, like you said, meeting every week. just making that effort to show that I appreciate your culture, that I appreciate the things that you love to do. Teach me how to cook, anything like that just goes a long way to building relationships.
When I lived in my last country, I lived there 20 years, and one of my teachers was my best friend. And after 2 years studying the language under her at a university, she said to me, "In the 2 years I've known you, I have visited more places in my province than I ever visited in my whole life." Because she was married and had a kid, and they had never been anywhere. So every time I could, I'd say, "Let's go somewhere." And it really built the relationship. So 24 years later, she's still a very, very, very good friend of mine. So traveling together just really makes a lot of time possible to get to know each other way better.
So good. Thank you, ladies, so very much. And I did want to tell our listeners, we have a few other episodes that are similar topics. Our episode number 8 was called The Four Essentials of Missionary Leadership, and it just goes through exemplify, equip, encourage, and trust. Like, those are the four things we're doing with our partners and our teammates. And so we've hit on all of those in this episode, actually. Maybe we didn't use those exact words. And episode 7 is on every member ministry, where the concept of just training every believer we can and equipping them to do the work. And then we do have an episode specifically on developing female leaders. That was episode 21. So you all can listen to those if you haven't. And we will look forward to seeing you all soon. Thanks again, Terry and Elle.